Jim Kawakami, the editor-in-chief of the very athletic Bay Area. Jim Kawakami.
Tim Kawakami, who has covered the NBA for over two decades, and more specifically the Golden State Warriors over the last 12 years.
This is the TK Show.
Hey everybody, Tim Kawakami here, TK Show, recording from the home studio with, if you're watching on video, you can see the smiling face in his car as it gets charged, Greg Papa, 49ers play-by-play announcer, and various other roles he has. Pop, I'm just happy you're out of the haircut. We're trying to check through it. He checks in, and he says, hey, get a haircut.
I had a very tight schedule today, 3:30 haircut, 4:15 supercharging. I'm not driving, though, not even the automated, so I'm good there, California Highway Patrol. And I got like 45 minutes to charge so I can talk to Kawakami.
Wow.
Once a year, you reach out to me right before the season starts,
correct,
and we do this.
Correct.
I'd like to hear the one we did 2 years ago when Brock Purdy was a third-string quarterback at the time, first behind Trey Lance and Nate Sudfeld, and then later it was Trey Lance and Jimmy Garoppolo. I mean, pretty amazing what this guy has meant to the 49er franchise in just two short years. I wonder, when we did this preseason of 2022, do we even mention the name Brock Purdy?
I think we might have, because you were sneaking in little hints about him, Pop. I've given you credit for it. I kind of made fun of you at the time. But
you did.
You were hearing things. You were seeing things. And that was not long ago. But I flash back to, Pop, just a year ago, Trey Lance, a little over a year ago, Trey Lance was still on the team. Like, he was theoretically – it's amazing that it feels like that era is 5 years ago, and he had been beaten out by Brock Purdy at that point. But he was still on the team. Like, they traded him the day of the last preseason game last year, Pop. Just think about all the plans that went into Trey Lance, then just went swoop right over to Brock Purdy just like that. We'll start it this way. Welcome to Greg Papa, 49ers play-by-play announcer on TK Show. I think you know everyone figured that. Now he's knocked his phone over, so I don't know what's going on.
I didn't knock it. It fell out of my steering wheel.
Earthquake or something going on over there in East Bay.
It's always something.
So much has been going on with the 49ers. We'll get to this last few days. It's been incredible. But the thing that, you know, like, we haven't talked that much about is Brock Purdy. It's just been a regular training camp for a starting quarterback for the 49ers. They haven't had a regular training camp for the quarterback in a long time. You've been around, and you know, I know you talk to people. Just what's your sense about where Purdy is, where he is in the 49ers, you know, where he is in the offense, where he is, where this offense is going? Is there a direction this is headed with Brock Purdy in the 49ers?
It's going upward. He's getting better every day because he works so hard. John Gruden always had the famous line, and so many football coaches have copied it since, and I think coaches overall, and I know Kyle prescribes to it, is if you're not getting better, you're getting worse, because everybody else around the league is getting better. And Brock is just such – what makes Brock Purdy, Tim, is who he is as a person. He wakes up every day and has something to accomplish that day. So I think he's getting better. This past offseason, physically, he could get better and work on his biomechanics and throwing. And like Jimmy Garoppolo, get into his legs. I mean, Jimmy was a strong leg thrower. Brock is as well with the baby Bosa quads he's got. And he's just more alert, more in tune. I thought he was better last year with his pocket presence, stepping up in the pocket and getting out to his right and not retreating in the pocket and then going left like he did when he first started those handful of games when Jimmy got hurt a few years ago. So I think he's better. I think the personnel around him's better. But I go back to what you mentioned, Trey, and it was just, I don't know, every August, I think, since they've become, you know, Kansas City's probably the it team in the NFL. But the 49ers are the it team in the NFC. Star power and accomplishment and expectation. So you always go into these Augusts with expectation. And to me, it's a little bit of anxiety rolled into agita. You know, I'm Italian, so my grandma would talk about agita. I always thought it was a Yiddish word, but it's actually Italian. And it's just that gripping feeling. And this year we had it with Ayuk, certainly, and Trent. But then last year, it was the Bosa contract holdout, and then it was the Trey Lance. I mean, people actually thought Trey Lance was better than Brock Purdy last year.
Silly.
As ridiculous as that is, But it also was a product of, I think, Brock's elbow uncertainty and would he come off that injury and how would he be? And he was as good as ever. So I think we just kind of go through this every August. And last year we felt it. I felt it more even last year with the Bosa holdout and the Trey Lance Brock thing and Sam Darnold was there. And then they traded, as you mentioned, Trey, right before that last preseason game against the Chargers to Dallas. You know what they got? What draft pick they got?
Dominic
Malik Mustafa.
I was going to say Tooney. No, it's right. It was fourth round. Malik Mustafa. Yep.
It was Malik Mustafa who was the pick. So now look at what he's doing and how he contributes. And I root for Trey. I watched every single snap he played in the preseason. And he had some electrifying moments where he ran the ball well and some good throws, but a lot of misses. And obviously the five interception game at the end was not good. So hopefully he'll find his place in the NFL. But along the way, Mr. Irrelevant has just saved this franchise. There's no doubt.
Could you see Kyle Shanahan? Now, he hasn't loved it when I've asked him this version of this question, but I'll ask you. Could you see the 49ers moving to, you know, more three wide out, throw the ball maybe? You know, you're not throwing the ball 60% of the time. You're not Andy Reid. But maybe throwing the ball 52, 53, not being the team that throws the ball the least in the NFL like they were last season?
Well, David Lombardi, who we both know and love and respect, you know, has the numbers on Kyle throwing the ball more in the playoffs last year. Although those games were different, falling behind against Green Bay, down essentially the whole game into the last drive when Brock was, what, 6 for 7 or 7 for 8, and the one drop was Kittle. One incomplete was a Kittle drop. And then, you know, falling behind 24-7 to Detroit. But Kyle, even when you're behind those kind of scores, you can still run the ball. You don't have to – you need to score on this drive. You don't need to score on the first play of the drive. So to answer your question, I think Brock has created perfect balance in this offense. And they wound up being the third highest scoring team in the NFL, the second highest as far as total points scored in the history of the Niner franchise. Now, they had an extra game. Brock did not play in that extra game against the Rams. Sam Darnold did. But to me, they averaged over 30 a game last year. It was a three-game streak when, you know, Debo was hurt, Trent Williams was essentially hurt, and they scored 17, 17, and 17 in the three consecutive losses. The rest of the time, they were an offense that scored basically over 30 a game. Now, Jimmy's team in 2019, they were the second leading scoring team in the NFL that year behind Baltimore, and the Niners averaged just a tick below 30. So he was able to score with a run-based team in 19. But I think what Kyle strives, any coach, any sport, you want the other team to have no idea what you're going to do. If they have a clue that you're going to run it, they're going to be more run loaded and stop the run. It's just obvious, you know, schematics if they think you're going to pass it, vice versa. But if you're completely balanced and they have no idea what you're going to do unless you get into obvious down and distance, then you're a scary team, especially when you have all these offensive weapons around the quarterback. And then the quarterback, you know, the Brock star, you know, the genius that he is and everything he's able to settle in there and make the right choices, the quick processor that he is, he can get it to the right guy. So I think that's the perfect balance in what Kyle wants. To answer your question, they still love Kyle Juszczyk, and he still gives them a matchup advantage where if you have two backs on the field and one tight end and then two wide receivers, that's pro personnel, you're going to get probably a lot of teams matching up in their base personnel. They could give you a nickel personnel, but then you're inviting the Niners to run on you. If you go the other way and show them a nickel, you know, look, 11 personnel, which is three wide receivers, and they counter with their nickel, then Kyle, I think, would run the ball against that. So you could create the matchups you want based on the personnel. And I think that's the genius of Kyle Shanahan, is dictating who you're going to have on the field based on his personnel. But what you're essentially asking is, Kittle's going to be on the field, McCaffrey's going to be on the field, Ayuk's going to be on the field, Debo's going to be on the field. So do you want to put Kyle Juszczyk on the field, or do you want to put Juwan Jennings on the field, or Ricky Pearsall on the field, or Jacob Cowing on the field. I mean, there's some formations where you would put a second tight end on the field, but you're basically saying, do you want a fullback or a third wide receiver? And I think now with Pearsall and his special ability, and, you know, hopefully he gets through everything he's going through physically, emotionally, psychologically, everything. He's a special player. And that three wide receiver package is scary. It's different than Juwan, and Juwan's so good. He's third in Juwan. He's changed, the chain mover, and he's such a great blocker. But essentially what you're asking is, do you want Juszczyk on the field, or do you want a third wide receiver on the field? I think the answer by and large before was Juszczyk. But I think that, you know, as Pearsall develops and Juwan Jennings gets over his injuries in camp, that is something that's going to be interesting to watch them do this.
Yeah, year. And I think, I guess, hovering over this entire offseason was the knowledge that Brock Purdy's getting a huge deal next season, right? That is an investment that is happening. We know it's $50 million, $55 million a year, whatever that number is going to be. And it might tilt the roster a little bit. And again, we'll see. And if you're counting on this team being really good for the next 5 years, you're counting on Brock Purdy being really good, and you're paying Brock Purdy to be really good. So I get, you know, you can still run the ball even when your quarterback's making $60 million. You still have to run the ball even when your quarterback's making that much money. But I could just feel a little tilt. I think the players are sort of talking about that. They know what's coming down the road. I think some of these holdouts are sort of about getting the money while it's there before a lot of it goes to Brock. It's natural. I don't know. Again, Kyle's inclination is never to even think like that. The personnel does seem to suit it a little bit at this point, but we shall see. I'm just bringing that up, just how much the Purdy contract does kind of loom over everything.
Well, he's going to have the largest increase from one season to the next season as far as salary in the history of American sport. I don't follow international soccer enough. Maybe I should, with them buying and owning operating leads, but I don't know. International soccer stars have made that kind of leap. But Purdy's going to go essentially from 0 to 60 in a lot faster than his car, I'm saying.
Please don't do that. Please don't test it out.
And he's not at zero, but he's not at one yet. He makes less than $1 million. Mm-hmm. And he may not get to 60, but Jordan Love just got $55 million. And Jordan Love is a tremendous talent. But he did it essentially in half of his season last year in a couple of playoff games. And then he made an ill-advised choice at the end of that game against Brock to throw across his body on first down, where Brock has done it for three half seasons. So a whole year and the half year when he came in for Jimmy. So I think to you what you're looking at, and, you know, Kyle looks at the numbers, obviously being, you know, the head coach of the football team, and so aligned with John and Parag and Jed, and they look at the salaries of everybody. But I think what Brock has opened up for Kyle as a play caller is the entire width of the field and the depth of the field. And I love Jimmy. I love Jimmy, and I think Jimmy gets a bad rap here. And when we look back on Jimmy, I know, and you and I have had many conversations about him, he had his limitations, but he was a really effective player. But I think ultimately you were limited. And, you know, Jimmy had a strong arm, but by and large, it was between the number passing game, and he would not drive the ball deep down the field. I think he could have. It just didn't hit at a high enough percentage. I think with Brock, he's able to throw the ball to the outside of the field, the outside the numbers, to the sideline. And he does look deep down the field, and he hits deep. Even though people think he doesn't have a great throwing arm, it's just not true. He's one of the most efficient, effective deep ball throwers in the NFL. And Trey Lance could do that well. Trey had a hard time short to intermediate, but when Trey was going to drive the ball down the field, he would look deep and throw it deep. And he, remember the Houston last game, or January 2nd game, he played when Jimmy got hurt in Tennessee. He had like two or three deep interference, holding, pass interference calls on deep shots. So what Kyle's looking for is the way to open up his offense. So I think with Brock Purdy and his arm talent and his ability to see it and rip it, and quarterbacks are taught to look deep to short, Brock looks deep and throws it deep if it's there. He doesn't force it deep, but he throws it there appropriately deep when it's open. and then, but he can still hit the short one, the intermediate one, all the, you know, the between the number ones, the Debo dig, the Kittle over the middle, the Ayuk slant, the McCaffrey choice route that goes over the middle. But if you're sitting on those routes, he can also hit you outside the numbers and drive the ball down the field. And then lastly, I mean, Peyton Manning and Tom Brady, I guess it's the previous generation of quarterbacks in the NFL, or maybe two earlier, I forget what it is, but they ran the game at the line of scrimmage with Peyton and the check with Mees and the three calls from Tom Moore and the concepts and Brady as well. I thought one of the most genius things those guys ever did was check out of a pass to a run. And I saw him do it all the time when they had a light box and they would just run the ball. And that's the genius of quarterback play. And Brock has the latitude at the line of scrimmage to get out of the to can or Oscar a call, or the Niners do actually call three plays for him, and he can go to whatever one he wants. So I think that's the what Brock allows you is not just the ability to throw the ball and open up the passing game. When you're getting deep coverages because they fear you going over the top, it opens up the running game. You know, you want to play the Niners with a seven-man box? Good luck with this running game and that running back and this offensive line and the creativity of this head coach and Chris Foerster and Juszczyk and Kittle and everything they do. So I hear you, but I think ultimately, Kyle, what he wants them on the other side, you have no idea what we're going to do. We could run it. We could throw it. Hell, on some plays, we may do both. We may run it and pitch it back and throw it. So you don't know. That's when you have a scary offense, is when you have it all open to you, the width of the field, the depth of the field, every blade of grass, as they say. And then you have a quarterback that can disperse it all, process it quickly. And then we haven't even gotten into the special playmakers they are. They got McCaffrey and Juszczyk and Kittle and Ayuk and Debo and Pearsall and Jennings. I mean, it's one of the great eligibles that an offense has ever had, you know, in Niner history or in football history.
All right, Paul, what the last few days have been like for you? I mean, you're around the team, you know, people on the team. I'm sure you got the news about Pearsall and were as shocked as anyone else was. You had the Ayuk kind of stare down, come to a head. You had the Pearsall shooting. Then you've got Trent Williams signing. In the middle, there's a team party. Were you at the team party, by the way? And
I don't think I invited. I'm gonna raid the liquor cabinet.
Wise decision by Kyle Shanahan. But what kind of emotions did you go through? Who were you talking to? And just like what kind of effect might this have on an entire franchise?
I actually ran into my boss, our director of broadcasting, Bob Sargent. Mm-hmm. We were having cocktails that day, and it all unfolded. And Bob and I got an alert on my phone, and I just kind of checked it. And then Bob very casually said, Ricky Pearsall was shot. And I'm like, what? And then you're scrambling. And we actually had people in the front office were at the card signing and at the Cow Palace. And Dante Whitner was there, we found out later. So we knew some people there. And then we knew people around the you know, where it was happening. No, even in the city when they got to Union Square. Fumble. I think we, by the time I found out about it, we knew he was okay, but not to the extent like what happened. He got shot at 3:30 in the afternoon on a Saturday in broad daylight. I mean, he's the last guy that I would look to rob some jewelry from. you pick it, you know, somebody else, but that guy. So, and then it went through his chest. You're like, what? And then it went out the back and, you know, what happened? And then you saw the video. I was sent the video of it right away before it even got on social media. And it was scary. It was, wow. How many Bay Area sports athletes in history have been shot? I mean, I think a Sean Taylor in Washington was murdered at a very young age. It's happened, you know, where guys... Plexico Burris shot himself inadvertently in a club. You know, Brian Robinson, young running back in Washington, got shot in the leg in a carjacking a couple of years ago. And it's happened, but it just, you know, it's kind of out of your realm of thinking. And then it's one of those surreal moments where you hear that it happened and you don't really process what happened. Like, what happened? How did that happen? So anyway, he was discharged the next day, and hopefully he'll be fine. The young man's endured a lot this rookie year. It's just, it's unbelievable. Yeah. From, you know, the dislocated shoulder and the OTAs, the hamstring injury when he left after training camp, after mini camp, before training camp, and dislocated the shoulder again on August the 6th. And then this to happen, like, wow, they are really trying this guy. But it's weird how life just kind of slaps you in the face, I think, a little bit, Tim, because the Aiyuk thing was all we talked about, right? We didn't talk about anybody in camp. It was who's out of camp. And I get it. I understand. Those are two essential pieces of the football team, all pros. So Aiyuk and Trent are important. But Aiyuk finally agrees to his deal on Thursday, signs it on Friday. And the very next day, when they're all looking to go to Kyle's party, the rookie wide receiver gets shot in the chest. And it's just like, whoa. And Trent was saying, and you were there the other day, that that's a big reason why he came in. He wanted to be the leader and be around his team. And he met Ricky when he was out for the mini camp in June. I think, August had a lot of anxiety and agita. And it seems like every year they kind of have this. It's the price of doing business and all of having all these stars. But I think the Ricky Pearsall thing, we'll see what it does to the team. But I think it's a slap in the face for everybody that there's something bigger than all this. Yeah. You know, we all get wrapped up in wins and losses and money and this and that. And none of it matters. You got to, it's who you are and what you are and how's your health, how's your family. So this is the Niner family, taking this guy. So I've seen it happen in sports for decades where a loss of life or a scary situation like this can really bring a team together. And I think they've already been together. This is a tight group. They don't have any bad actors in that locker room. They're all good people. They're all hard workers with immense talent and incredible work ethic. But I think something like this, and we'll see, and the Jets are going to be a challenge on Monday night. They're a good team with that quarterback and those weapons and Robert Saleh and that special defense and Sauce Gardner and Quinn and Williams, everybody. But we'll see how they respond on Monday night, Tim. But I think we've seen it happen. The word everybody's using is galvanize. I think this is, and a lot of times a team, what makes a team great is not so much the X's and O's and the players and everything. That's all critically important. But what makes it great is when they come together and they really feel something together. And this team has had it in years past. But as John Lynch was telling you guys recently, you don't just show up and go to the Super Bowl. You got to earn it. There's a journey there. There's a step-by-step process. And every team's a new team. Every season's a new season. Every game's a new DNA. And you got guys in this locker room that were never there before. And they gotta win over everybody's respect. But I think when you go through a moment like this, and I wonder, a lot of these guys have had hard upbringings. And they've been exposed to some incredible things. Trey Greenlaw's story is amazing. What he had to endure as a young man to be here. But when you actually see it in your own locker room and a guy just gets shot in Union Square in San Francisco going to buy luggage for the first road trip to Minneapolis, I mean, wow. That is something that'll bring everything together. So, and that was the last day of August. That was August 31st. So I think all that August anxiety and agita is put it behind, and it's time to play September football and roll into September the 9th now.
Is this season, when John Lynch talked about that, you have to re-earn it, it was a question I asked, because we always talk about last few years, got to win a Super Bowl, set up to win a Super Bowl. They were just in the Super Bowl. You were tied in the Super Bowl. You went ahead in overtime in the Super Bowl.
No one's ever done that and lost the game, by the way. That's never happened before.
Do you feel this is a continuation? Is this team the same mindset as it's been the last few years, or is it a little different because they're older, because they've gone through some of these trials and not won the big game?
Yeah, I don't know yet. I got to be around them more. But how many guys on the team were there in 2019?
Nick,
obviously, George Kittle, Debo Samuel. Not a lot of guys. Aiyuk was not there. Trent Williams was not there. McCaffrey was not there. Juszczyk was there. Brock was not there. I mean, the defense is different. Fred Warner was there. Dre, but it's different. So I think more so were there for the heartbreak of the championship games, the back-to-back years in L.A. and Philadelphia. But even, there's a lot of new guys from last year's team that lost in Vegas to the Chiefs. So you got a whole new D-line. You know, Leonard Floyd has had his own different experiences, and, you know, Malik Collins and Gross Matos and Jordan Elliott. It's all different. So, and then the rookies, I think those rookies are going to play a lot. So it's a new team. Every year you start anew and you have to begin a new chapter. There are some heartaches and memories and commonalities and big wins. This team's won a lot of games. Obviously, 8 playoff games the last 4 of the last 5 years, 2 each year. And I think it's both. It's enough of the heartache for most of the guys, or a lot of the guys, to experience what they've experienced, for those few to, you know, over the last 5 years, and for some the last 3, and then we'll see. But they have to begin their own chapter, and they've taken different journeys. You know, the 2019 started 8-0. And last year started 5-0. And the other two teams that made the championship game were 3-5 and 3-4. So, getting off to a quick start has been essential for them to be the one seed and host the 2 playoff games going all the way to the Super Bowl. But whatever the route, Tim, they've won 2 playoff games every year. They've made the playoffs with Kyle as the coach. They just haven't been able to win the third one.
Yep.
They've gone 2-1 every year, whether it's win 2 at home to go to the Super Bowl, lose the Super Bowl, or win the wild card at home, another divisional, then go to the championship game, lose that game. They got to find a way, and they've had 8 game winning streaks and 5 game winning streaks. And hell, what they closed the year a couple of years ago, they had a 10 game winning streak.
Yep.
They won 3 in the playoffs, 2 in the playoffs, right, for 12? So they're capable. They just got to figure out a way, assuming they don't have to play in that wild card game, to go on a 3 game winning streak in January and February. I mean, that's what they got to do, right? Is just get on that 3 game winning streak at the end to win the Super Bowl.
One thing curious, just general question, Pop. As you approach a season, getting ready to call 17 games and probably more, do you do anything? Do you have any prep work that, like, you could say, okay, this is what I do when I prepare for a season? Or is it just the regular film work that you do every week? What's kind of the mechanics of you getting ready to call a season?
Well, the preseason is a separate entity completely because there's so many players. And then we do those games by and large. And this year there was one on radio. Fox took a game on national TV. But preseason is a little bit different in how I prepare because of TV versus radio and just the volume of the players. But now, paring down my own sheets that I use, and I'll show you a little, quick sheet that I got on my. There's the Niner offense. I'm still old school in how I do everything. Is that the Niners defense? And in the preseason, it was covered with names, and now I've kind of matted over a little bit. So I think, by and large, it's the same process. It's a lot of reading, the daily Niner clips, the other team's clips, and they could be 100 pages long. And looking at video, obviously. And I've been looking at the Jets pretty much since last weekend, Labor Day weekend, and looking at all their preseason games. But it's hard really to gauge much from those games because they didn't play their stars. So I'm looking mainly at last year's games late in the year and getting a look at Saleh's defense and all the eligibles around Aaron Rodgers. So it's just it's pretty much the same that I've done. I know you could ask me about my favorite reading.
Oh, my goodness. There you go. Ian O'Connor.
So that's the latest one on my bookshelf.
Aaron Rodgers. Right, he's showing the Aaron Rodgers unauthorized biography by Ian O'Connor, getting rave reviews.
You read this show?
I have not. I have not. I want to. I mean, I'm fascinated by this guy, obviously. I mean, he's been a Cal since he's been a Cal. And then when the 49ers did, I heard the 49ers had a chance to draft him and did not. That's been a rumor. So.
Well, I hear he called Mike Nolan Mike, and Alex Smith called him Sir.
Yep.
And there's a lot of that. There's a little chapter on that. So anyway, it's pretty much the same that I do every year, and it stair steps up to game time. But the generation that I'm, broadcasting football, the video access that I get, whether it's the All 22 or I can go back to any game they played, go back and watch the game where he got sacked last year by Leonard Floyd 4 snaps in. So it's a lot easier. I remember talking to Bill King when I first started doing the Raiders. And I'm like, how did you memorize people? He would bring, like, the opponent's roster And like when he was driving from Sausalito to a A's game to do a game, he'd have like the Miami Dolphins roster, and he'd see like, you know, 42 is Paul Warfield, and he'd have it on his the chair, the seat next to him in the car, and he'd look at it. Where it was so much, it was even when I started doing the Raiders, you know, it was a lot of VHS and VCRs, and now everything's on, you know, you get video immediately, and it's just, it's a lot easier to prepare. So the first game though is funky, because you don't have any preseason to look at with the Jets, and then even going back last year, Aaron Rodgers hasn't played with the Jets. He played four snaps, and he wasn't comfortable in the pocket for any of them. Every time he dropped back to pass last year on 9/11 against the Bills, he was uncomfortable in the pocket. So it's pretty much the same thing I've done throughout my life. I got to modernize this a little bit. But
you're not Papa. That's why I asked you, because I saw that on your lap. I go, he's got his chart. He's studying his chart right now.
I'm right here. I'm making noises. When I got my hair cut and I'm charging my car, I'm updating my iPhone.
This is the Papa life right here. If we could just get you driving around and losing your signal, then there'll be in the entire Papa life. Right there.
I got a clean line of sight. Good.
All right. Listen. You mentioned the Raiders. You were back there for an exhibition game. Are you okay with Mark Davis these days, or is that still
no? It's fine. I never was not okay with him, and he's the one that fired me. I didn't leave them. It's pretty obvious that, you know, we've played them four times now since January 1st of 2023. Right, 2023, we've played them. Oh, we played in their stadium once, preseason twice against them, and then that game on Jan 1 of 23 at the end of the 22 year. So I feel like we've been there. Then we had the joint practices with them last year. And all the while I was there, it's just wherever you go, there's a Raider logo right in your face. So, and it's weird because it's got the LV logo. So, you know, I was there on, we were there. Alumni weekend was that preseason game we played them on August 23rd. And, you know, they had the Rod Woodson interception against Brian Greasy on the Monday night game in 2002, and Rod ran it back.
Remember?
98 yards for a touchdown. And I was told this a few years ago, that he had all my calls pulled from the archives. They're not allowed to play any of my calls. So I did the team for 21 years. So we had some great moments. So, and that particular call was one of the signature moments of that season. They started 4-0. They lost 4 in a row. It was Veterans Day night in Denver, and he intercepted Greasy and ran back a touchdown, 98 yards. It flipped the game around. It flipped the Raiders season around. It flipped Denver around. I think after that game, Mike Shanahan moved on from Brian Greasy, and he went and got Jay Cutler. So he changed it. He just said, you know, Brian had to move on. I think Brian went to Tampa, where he's with Kyle. Anyway, they used Al Michaels' call when they were showing it on the scoreboard.
Wow.
And you know how much Al Davis detested Al Michaels. I mean, you know, it's Pete Rozelle and Mike Shanahan.
Marcus Allen. Marcus Allen.
And Al Michaels are on the Mount Rushmore of Al's loathing, you know, loathsome people. So they played Al Michaels' call over mine. I went, Wow. Once a Raider... Once a Raider, always a traitor, I think is the new name. Tim, I am no longer a Raider.
Yeah, it's
I'm lower on the poll. I'm lower than Al Michaels.
I think the whole new list now is just you. It's just you. All the other guys. Marcus is around there all the time. It's just Papa now. You're just the only on
that's the old man I'm talking about.
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
With Mark, I'm definitely above all those guys.
You are absolutely. Should be proud of it, Pop. You achieved a status there. All right, listen, that's hilarious stuff. I will end this with a version of a question I've asked all my guests and Pop so many different times. I've asked you a couple quick ones then, Pop. What's your favorite book right now?
Well, I'm reading it right now.
Okay, good. Aaron Rodgers.
The author's obviously a very successful writer, you know, Connor. And I'm about halfway through it now, and it deals with, you know, the trials and tribulations of Aaron and his conflicted. He's an interesting man. The guy's a genius. He's one of the great pure throwers of the football. So to prep for the Jets game, I am immersing myself in all things Aaron Rodgers. So I'm reading his book. I'm right now at the chapter, heavily highlighted. And, you know, our friend Mike Silver went back to Florham Park and talked to him about it. was the choice of Alex Smith over Aaron Rodgers. Honestly, did they take Alex Smith number one over Aaron because he called Mike Nolan sir? I mean, that's kind of what Aaron Rodgers thinks, or was relayed to Ian.
I heard something similar. Like, Nolan just liked the cut at Smith's jib, and he did not like the cut of, you know, Aaron Rodgers' jib. Just the way it was.
Like the cut of the jib. You know, like the cut of the jib.
Yeah.
So I don't know. Maybe Aaron needed to expose Mike Nolan to ayahuasca back then, and he would have gone that route. So I know you love to ask me the other one about a favorite restaurant.
Yep.
And is there a bad one in the Bay Area? No. But I'm so immersed in Aaron Rodgers now. I'm reading his book, and I am out of the darkness now. But I did go to a restaurant on Labor Day weekend called, are you ready for it?
No.
Ayahuasca.
Oh, my goodness.
It's called Ayahuasca.
What in the world?
It's a Peruvian.
Yeah.
It's a Peruvian restaurant. They had a seafood rice dish that was amazing. And the first of it is all about ayahuasca. I don't think they serve it on the menu. I'm not sure it's legal to have it there and then drive home after. But there is a restaurant in Novato. If you want to just immerse yourself like I am to prep for this game, reading Aaron Rodgers, eating Aaron Rodgers ayahuasca, you would like it, Tim.
Okay,
a little on the spicy side. They got some yummy cocktails.
Yep.
But if you're ever up in Marin, it's in Novato, and it's a great drive up a hill side, kind of like the Buckeye out here as well. But it was delicious food. I'd never heard of it before, but I stumbled onto ayahuasca. So you got to try that.
I do like
Peruvian.
Yeah, I do like Peruvian food. There's some really good Peruvian restaurants. Peruvian chicken is just tremendous, but also the seafood. All good. All right, Pop. Well, just chat with Aaron before the game. Let him know all these things. I'm sure he'd be dying to know ayahuasca. You should.
Can I get an autograph? You think I can bring a book?
He'll be happy to sign it for you, Pop. But he'd rather like see that the menu from that restaurant. Probably he'd be fascinated by that.
I will send that to the Jets PR, and maybe he'll eat there before the game when he comes back. He'd love to get a little more ayahuasca.
Pop, you and Rodgers, I can see being kind of a little duo running around town. Watch out for you guys. And Mike Nolan, watch out. Mike Nolan, beware. Papa and Aaron Rodgers are running around out there.
Sir Mike. What if I called him Sir Mike? I don't know if he's been knighted. Maybe he could have handled it that way.
I don't know where he is.
Sir Mike.
All right, Pop. I hope your car is all charged up. I thank you so much for your time. And listen.
360 miles. I'm ready to go to Levi's. I'm good.
You're good. You're charged. Your haircut's good. You're clean. Here we go. By the time I see you on Monday night, you're going to be all bedraggled and, you know, all messed up. But right now, you're looking good. Get everybody on the video. There's Greg Papa looking good. All right, everybody. Thanks so much.